Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to another episode of PWT Talks NXT for December 6th, 2022. I'm your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg, and you can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses. However, tonight I didn't write the hits and misses. I actually filled in and wrote the live recap for Kelly. Kelly is going to be posting my hits and misses later on in the week. So thank you, Kelly, for doing that for me. Then again, I got the you know, crap end of the stick. I had to write the longer report. Anyway, we're not here to talk about all of that stuff. We're here to talk about NXT and everything we saw here tonight leading up to Deadline this Saturday. And here to talk with me is Bruce Hazelwood. Bruce, say hey.
Hey there, everyone. I'm Bruce Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. I also do the report, but tonight Nate filled in for both of us. So you have his thoughts on the site, and I guess next week you might have mine, or we'll see what happens.
Indeed. So we had our main event tonight was not quite a match. It was more of a segment where we had all five members going into the Iron Survival Challenge, or Iron Survivor Challenge, match at Deadline, including Axiom, who was the wild card, who won his match tonight to be entered into this match. We had Grayson Waller hosting a Waller effect for everybody in the match, which included himself, Tony D'Angelo, JD McDonough, Axiom, Joe Gacy, and Carmelo Hayes. It was a pretty interesting segment, you know, an entertaining segment. Essentially, all five of them kind of just started bickering a little bit back and forth, and it devolved into a big brawl, as we kind of assumed it probably would as the segment started, or at least I did anyway. Bruce, give me some of your thoughts on our kind of main event.
I think it was going fine up until Axiom started talking, unfortunately. You could tell right before he started that he forgot what he was supposed to say, and then from there he was trying to rush to remember everything. And whereas McDonough's calculated, methodical promos come off as sort of American Psycho-esque, Axiom just came off as Carmelo Hayes said, and in the worst possible way, a nerd, right? It was just so, by the time he finished, it was just like, You literally laid out the same exact thing that Shawn Michaels said in the video hyping up the rules. So, unfortunately for Axiom, he's done pretty well on these mic segments before, but they have been mostly in backstage segments where it's more contained and more controlled. And
yeah, being out I want to say this isn't this one of the first times we've actually seen him with a live mic in front of the crowd?
It might be. I'm struggling to think about when we have seen that, and that's because I'm just thinking of him and Fraser in the back, him talking to Mackenzie Mitchell, but I don't really remember him standing out front with a mic in front of the crowd and on live TV. So maybe a little of that got to him right when he was supposed to speak, and it showed. And Waller and Hayes did what they could to try and rescue the segment, but once Axiom started, it just hit it really no return. That they could have done. The brawl at the end, I don't know if it's just me, but it seems like wrestling shows throughout the past couple of weeks, most of them have ended with pull-apart brawls, or they've had pull-apart brawls within them. So I'm wondering if we're somehow jumping the shark with all these brawls, because they used to be so novel and so notable when they did happen because of how rare they were. And it just feels like there have been way too many recently across, whether it's WWE, AEW, I feel like there's just been too many of these. And you know, I think last week there was Hangman Page and John Moxley on AEW. So, and SmackDown, Raw, I feel like there just happens to be one every episode now. And I just feel like they could pull back on that, because not everything needs to have that. I think outside of Axiom, each person did well on the mic. Waller is going to make so much money in this business. I noted when he was backstage with Mackenzie Mitchell that both of them are going to make so much money in this business, just based off of their promo ability and characterization alone. The triple threat match, touch on it here. I think last week you and I said that Von Wagner is probably the favorite just based on history, because he's always been the go-to here in these situations when they needed a fifth man. I think I said that I'd rather have Axiom win, but Wagner was probably the favorite. So I'm glad they went against the grain here and they put Axiom in. Yeah. But regardless of what I just said about him on the mic, when it comes to being in the ring, he's definitely one of the best in NXT, and it's going to be interesting to see how these five styles mesh together because, you know, I don't think Hayes, McDonagh, and Axiom really have too much to worry about. It's just, you know, Waller, it really depends on how he's booked. And then Gacy is really the wild card on how everything's going to mesh because while they've repackaged him a little bit in terms of his in-ring and his presentation since they added Ava Rain, you know, he doesn't come out in the button-up and slacks anymore. He's a little more physical. I'm not sure if – I guess I'm just more curious to see how this match plays out because of the styles, even though I'm pretty sure it'll still end up being a good match.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's going to be a pretty fun match as well. Like we were talking last week, as you said, about Von Wagner kind of being the favorite, I think, to win the triple threat here tonight. And I started thinking about this after Axiom won, and I was looking at the graphic that showed all the five men, and I'm like, you know, we should have seen that coming because if we look at everybody else, there was like there's really no faces in the match. The only one I guess is really like Carmelo Hayes, and he's kind of just a face because everybody likes him. He's not really like being booked as a face or anything right now. I was a little disappointed in myself that I didn't see that coming, but you know, whatever. It's not the first time. But I am looking forward to it. I think Axiom is going to be a great addition to the match. And pretty much he's going to be able to match just about anybody's style in the ring. Von Wagner, Joe Gacy would be a little bit of a, you know, detractor, I think, might be a little bit their styles may not completely mesh, but I still think it's going to be a good match overall. I'm not sure who the winner is going to be out of this one, to be honest. I'm hoping it's Carmelo Hayes. Like, he's the one I'm rooting for. But in terms of like who's actually going to come out on top, I'm not 100% sure. I think I'm leaning towards Hayes though. Whereas like the women's match, I'm pretty sure it's going to be Indy Hartwell. I'd be very surprised if it's not.
Okay.
That's just, I don't know. We'll talk about this, I guess, a little bit more when we get there too, but Indy's been on a journey for like months. I feel like she's been on a journey since Dexter Lumis and the rest of like the way where, have kind of like been gone from NXT. And I feel like it would be a good culmination to kind of see her, if I'm a little bit more stumbly and bumbly than normal, I popped for COVID about 20 minutes before we started the show. I'm not feeling all that great myself. But I think it would be kind of a great, a climax to the story, Indy Hartwell's story, that she's been on so far. If, you know, she was the one to dethrone, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
The men's match. I think to be fair, we said that Von Wagner probably the favorite just because there's no one with size within that match, and he was the one. But, you know, seeing all the faces or seeing all the heels, it does make sense. I don't think it's going to be McDonagh or Gacy because, as Hayes pointed out tonight, they already had their shot and they lost both, and McDonagh's lost a couple times, I think. So that leaves Axiom, Waller, and Hayes. I think they might pull the trigger on Waller getting the title shot here because the thing is, if it's Waller or Hayes, I think the other is going to be in the Royal Rumble. So last week I said, who did I say was going to make their debut in the Rumble from NXT? I can't remember. But I think this is one of those situations too. Like, one, we don't know when the title shot is going to happen after deadline, right? Is it going to be on NXT? Is it going to be a stand and deliver, which is a couple months out? Is it going to be Royal Rumble weekend or, you know, somehow, some way? Like, we haven't had an official confirmation of that yet. Is it going to be the same night, for example? We don't know. So with that being said, I feel like it's going to be at least the earliest it will be next Tuesday. And even with that, I guess you could have both debut in the Rumble and it still be fine. I feel like they're going to stretch it out a little bit though. So if you need someone to stretch it out, I think the best person for that, especially to stretch it out with vignettes or promo segments, would be Grayson Waller. And he's also the only one who really hasn't had, well, besides Axiom, he's so new, who hasn't really had a singles title shot yet, if I remember correctly. Most of his things have been multi-person matches. I'm trying to remember. So I think it could be a good time for him to get there because, I mean, you just look at him tonight. Like, he carried every segment he was in. He was, I guess, the energy, those segments. And, yes, Hayes is definitely who I've been saying for the whole year that I wanted to take the title off Breaker. However, I also think that Hayes is at a point now where NXT is probably hindering him more than it is helping him. So I think that he's not long for NXT, and probably in early 2023 is going to make his debut on Raw or SmackDown. That's what I just feel like. There's more for him on those shows than there is for him left to do. And if it's just an NXT championship title run, you know, just to have that, people have not had those and gone on and had perfectly fine careers. I mean, Bianca Belair right now is the prime example. She never won that title, and yet she's probably the most dominant women's champion. You know, her and Becky Lynch, I guess, are the two you could argue over the last 5 years. So not winning the NXT title, men's or women's, is not now in terms of your career. And we've seen some people that have won championships in NXT not do the greatest up on Raw or SmackDown. So, yeah, if all that they see for Hayes that's left is to win the title, I'd say that's not enough reason to keep him in NXT. So I would say Waller would be my favorite. And I think Roxanne Perez is actually the favorite to win for the women's match. I think Indy Hartwell's interaction with Mandy Rose, that's red herring. But we'll get to that later.
All right, fair enough. We'll see what happens there. Let's go ahead and go over to the phone lines, and we'll bring on Ryan from Cumberland. Ryan, what did you think of the show tonight?
It was a fine show, as usual.
All right, and what do you got for us?
My first question's on the Survivor Challenge matches. How much of this match, you think, is going to be focused on the heels, the speeding away on the baby face that's in the match, or since there's a lack of baby faces in these matches?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably going to be kind of a staple in both matches, I'm thinking. Yeah, where we're going to see a lot of ganging up on the baby faces. But I think it's really going to depend on how the match goes and, you know, what the order of the entrants are going to be. They're going to pull the order of the entrants during the kickoff show for Deadline. I believe they said it was a 7:30 start for the kickoff show. But they'll be pulling the order of the entrants for each match there. So I think that's going to kind of determine how some of the match goes, you know, for, you know, in terms of like if the faces are going to be you're getting bombarded by the heels or not. But it would not surprise me if that, you know, that's something that we see quite a bit in this match. Bruce, what do you think we're going to see in store during the Iron Survival Challenge? Anything like Ryan's bringing up, or you get something different in mind?
I mean, what happens if Waller and Gacy or Waller and Hayes start the match, right? So Waller also made himself an antagonist to all four of the other competitors in the match tonight. He had a barb for every single one of them, making it sure that he has no friends when it comes to the match on Saturday. And honestly, would it surprise me if all four of them, once they're all in the match, or all four of them once all five are in the match, gang up on him and send him out of the match for a bit. And then later he uses that spot to come back in and win the match. I feel like, or at least get enough pins to, you know, get a sneak. Maybe there's a, he comes in and gets a last pin at the end that puts him over the top in terms of the points. So I think what they did tonight is all set up in a way to have them take out Waller and have them forget about him, and then for him to come back and take it out from the snatch victory from the jaws of defeat, basically. And for the women's match, I don't know if there will be necessarily ganging up as much as there will be personal feuds being duked out, whether it's Indy Hartwell and Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade, Fallon Henley, or she didn't make the match, but she might come out for Kiana James. So there, I think that there's always a type of teaming up in these sorts of matches. I'm just not sure if it's going to the point of what Ryan is saying specifically, because I'm not sure if there's enough of a heel-face dynamic within, especially the men's match, for that to occur, and more of a, this guy is just an antagonizing a-hole and we all want to get a piece of him kind of thing. So, these matches are going to go at least 25 minutes. We know that much. So be prepared for some long sort of rest segments for some people on the outside after getting ganged up, maybe. And some furious, I'm going to say the last 2 minutes are probably going to be some furious finishers and pins and whatnot, just to try and get those last points in. So we also don't know, again, are these going to be openers and or are these going to be the show closers or what? So like is the women's, usually the women's match starts the show with when they have two of the same kind of these matches like we do with War Games. So that might be what happens here. But I think that the winner of each of these matches will signal who will be the victor in the respective men's and women's title matches.
All right, Ryan, what else you got for us tonight?
Well, actually, there is a men's title match. Check that. Men's title match.
Heavy question on Charlie Dempsey. Is it possible William Regal could manage him, or is his AEW contract written out that he's not allowed to appear on television if he leaves the promotion?
I have absolutely no idea what's actually in his AEW contract or not. From everything it seems, William Regal's going to be coming back to NXT. I would love to see him just pick up where he left off and go right back to being a general manager for NXT. I feel like NXT, I mean, yes, you can have a wrestling show without an authority figure, right? People did it for years before Vince McMahon showed up and became the authority figure for Raw, all of WWE, really. NXT has done it since William Regal's left. However, at least for me, I feel like sometimes you need an authority figure to explain why the things are happening that are happening. Like, if all of a sudden you just got a match that you're making in the middle of the night, well, what is that actually bumping off a TV? What was actually scheduled in that spot? Things like that feel like you just need somebody to maybe explain a little bit. And Shawn Michaels has done that. Like he came in and did the roundtable thing with all the legends a couple weeks ago. Or last week, or whenever it was last week. As far as I'm concerned, nobody can touch William Regal in a general manager role. I think he's the best general manager that WWE ever had. For any one of the brands, and I'm even talking when he was general manager with like Tajiri back in like what 2001 or whatever it was. 102. Yeah, I think it was right. Yeah, that's right. It was right after the invasion angle. But that's kind of where I personally see him slotting in. I think it really is going to depend too on what William Regal wants to do. It's not really a secret that him and Triple H are pretty close. So I'd almost imagine Triple H would let him come in and be like, yeah, what do you want to do? That's at least my two cents. Bruce, what do you think?
Excuse me. Okay, my mind just went blank. Authority figure, really Regal, right. So, by all accounts, it seems like his return is imminent. The AEW contract is up. I haven't read into the details if there's a non-compete.
Sorry, don't mean to cut you off, but Ryan also asked if we could see him managing Charlie Dempsey.
Right. So, yep. So to get to that point, I'm not sure if there's a non-compete. Even if there is a non-compete, you could still make the allusions to William Regal within promos and segments within that Charlie Dempsey has. You have announcers make the connection on commentary to him while he's doing his matches. The thing, so I would agree with you, except for the fact that Shawn Michaels has taken on more of an authoritative role in the past few months. The whole thing with Solo Sikoa and Carmelo Hayes comes to mind. The Iron Survival Challenge roundtable last week, or roundtables last week, also come to mind. So I don't think Regal, he'd be redundant in that position. Further, I think that Regal showed throughout his time in AEW that he has far more left to give to the business than simply being an authority figure who comes out and says War Games once a year. Okay, I think having the presence of Drew Gulak tonight, the former Cashpoint 2.0 stable member leader, I think this is going to lead to them, of course, having a battle, a feud, and I was ecstatic. I tweeted that someone's getting stretched, and this is my kind of wrestling. I tweeted that Charlie Dempsey is my type of professional wrestler, so him versus Gulak is just my kind of technical wrestling, sort of gritty. That's just all right there for me. I think what we're going to have is basically a Blackpool Combat Club in NXT, only with his son as the main focal point and Gulak as the lieutenant, as the second in command, as the Jey Uso to the Roman Reigns that will be Charlie Dempsey. Not to say that that's what they are, but just to make an example of the roles that they would play. And you could use NXT, like you could add Damon Kemp to that group easily because of his technical acumen as an amateur wrestler, right? You can have basically not just a BCC and a Catch Point fusion within NXT because of the abilities of these wrestlers and being headed by someone like William Regal, who has the respect, the authority, the legitimacy, the pedigree of not just being in the business, but of being that type of a wrestler. I think having that sort of, and they would, to me, to book them well, you wouldn't book them as heels or faces. You would just book them as aggressive, you know, physical wrestlers. And we've seen acts like that get cheered before. We've seen acts like that get booed before. I think that is the direction that they should go. I think it's the direction they will go because I think what William Regal did in AEW turned heads, and I think it showed people that that he could do more than just sit behind the desk for some of these segments, and he can still be out there leading a group, being the mouthpiece. Because if there's a group and it's Gulak as number two and Dempsey as the number one, they're gonna need some help on the mic, and Regal definitely has that. So that's what I think is gonna happen.
All right, Ryan, what else you got for us tonight?
I have a question on Ivy Niles. You see her turning heel. It seems like the Creed brothers have just sort of been ignoring her. I know J.D. McDonough, I believe, was sort of hanging out with her last week. Could she be satiated with him soon instead of the Creed brothers, or what do you think's going to happen with her?
You got the opposite. They're going to turn heel on her. She's the one looking out for them. She's correct. She's the one who's been right the whole time. And they're just basically they're being masculine men and trying to fight through all the pain and not listen to anything and just be stubborn and hard-headed. And even today, you see Brutus ask, what the hell was that? She's looking out for them. She's trying to protect them. She's in the right here. They're not. So I think, if anything, the Creed are going to go heel before Ivy Nile does. And Tatum Paxley's are kind of there.
Yeah, I pretty much 100% agree with everything Bruce just said. It seems like Ivy Nile is, you know, she's a little bit of the buzzkill because, you know, she doesn't necessarily want to let them go out and have their fun and you know, take out Indy Share or try to take out Indy Share simply because, you know, of a couple injuries or whatever. But, you know, like Bruce said, she's right. I mean, she's the one looking out for them and making sure they don't get hurt and all that. So I could see it being the other way around. I could see it being the Creed brothers getting the heel, you know, being the ones to do the heel turn, and Ivy Nile you know, splitting off and staying face. So yeah, that's kind of where I think we see that happening. In terms of like JD McDonough, I don't really know. I could kind of just see her probably doing her own thing with Tatum Paxley for a bit, you know, kind of doing a bit of a, you know, women's tag team. But I would like to see Ivy Nile break off and eventually do some single stuff. So I think, you know, I mean, she's got a lot of potential. And she's even getting better on the mic. She's not great on the mic, but she's much better on the mic than she was, what, 6 months ago, 8 months ago. So, yeah, I don't know if you have anything to bring up about the JD McDonough stuff or where she's going to go, Bruce. Or
I think McDonough was just a plot device, a MacGuffin to move the story along. Ivy Nile, she was most of us, if not all of us, have been in a position where we've seen people close to us who have done things against their better judgment, regardless of how much we've tried to rectify that situation. So I think Ivy Nile is coming off as relatable. And for people in this situation who have gone through that, they see the Creed brothers as being the stubborn a-holes. And yeah, like you said, her promos are getting better. They're still not the greatest, but they're getting over what they need to get over. And I think her body language has improved a lot in these segments and is doing much better at getting over some of the things she's trying to say.
All right, Ryan, anything else for us tonight, or shall we move on to Jarrell?
Final question. They announced that Denise from Wrestling Observer was going to be on the panel. Any chance of someday a person from the Wrestling Torch being on one of these pre-show panels?
I think she's with Fightful, not Wrestling Observer.
Yeah, I think she was with Fightful. I'm going to have to say, I'd say there's a possibility, but it's a very, very slim possibility. Before NXT 2.0, I remember Kelly being on a media call with Triple H, and at the time they were bringing in some outside, they were bringing in some more outside wrestling journalists. I can't think of who else they brought in at the time, but to sit on like the pre-show panels, and they said it during that media call, they'd like to try and get some of us and part of the pre-show panels. That kind of all went away after Vince and everybody kind of took over and 2.0 came over and all of that. Go Triple H back in the saddle again? Who knows? I would say it's a very slim possibility, but, you know, hey, I'd go and sit next to Sam Roberts, I guess. You know, why not? Bruce.
Well, I believe this is not Denise's first appearance on an NXT pre-show, so there's
I don't
that.
Think it is either, yeah.
Yeah, but also... I know I've heard Wade say before that he just refuses to do these because not his role as a wrestling journalist. Granted, Denise is not really a wrestling journalist as much as she is a wrestling media personality. For us at the Torch, I think it would be hard-pressed for us to go on one of these because, one, we know it's kayfabe and we're not going to be able to do what we do on these on there. And... there's a different optic to being on a pre-show than there is to being someone in a post-event media scrum or on a conference call. So I think we would try to avoid that line and just stick with what we had been doing, which would be the scrums and the conference calls. Now, I think that's because none of us are really wrestling media, are like wrestling personalities. We don't do YouTube shows. We don't have Twitches or anything like that. We do the stuff at the Torch, really, and that's it. Now, if there were people at the Torch who did more of that stuff, they could reach out to Cam, for example, and I could see Cam being on one of those. But Cam has gotten more into writing lately, so I'm not sure if he'd want to have that line blurred either. So there's just because of the focus of what we do versus the focus of a lot of what Denise does, I think we would probably say no, or at least I don't think we'd even necessarily be asked in the first place if it came down to it. So
yeah.
And it's nothing.
Yeah, that's what I meant, like it being a very small possibility. Like I didn't even think that the ask would really come our way, but yeah.
And it's nothing against Denise or Sam Roberts or whoever else they have on there. That's what they want to do. That's what they want to do. Good for them. They get more exposure. I'm sure they're getting a nice payday from it. But I think that for what we do, it wouldn't necessarily fit.
It would be a very reluctant no from me, but I guess you're probably right.
And the only reason I want to do it is just because I'd want to be there, but I don't really think I'd want to be on the actual panel. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I would. I'd ham it up. I love the sound of my own voice.
Nate Lindberg, sellout.
That's right. Nathaniel Dorian, wrestling historian. Anyway, all right, Ryan, thank you as always, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk with you next week, I'm sure. Let's go over to Jarrell and see what he has to say. Jarrell, what's going on?
How you guys doing?
I'm doing. hopefully tomorrow morning I'll still be doing.
I just think of it as a bad cold. You lost no sense of taste or nothing like that.
Yeah, so far it seems like a bad cold, but I don't know. We'll see what happens. Anyway, enough about COVID. Wrestling.
Yes, sir. First thing, you guys are talking about Stand and Deliver. Since I'm going to WrestleMania, Stand and Deliver was part of the package, and they already selling tickets and sold tickets to it. It will be Saturday. It will be like 12 or 1 o'clock West Coast time, so it'd be right before.
So you're telling me I got to watch Stand and Deliver? Sweet.
No.
Hey, you're the one
you
that's
going to
go and live in Hawaii.
Breakfast. Oh, yeah, you will. You over there in the West Coast. What am I talking about? Yeah, you will.
I'm not even the West Coast. I'm in the most isolated set of islands in the world.
Yeah, he's beyond the West Coast.
Ooh. Yeah, so, yeah, it is a show. They already came out. They came out 2 weeks ago and said, and gave the dates. They've been putting out the dates. You got the Hall of Fame Friday night after SmackDown. You got SmackDown, Raw. They gave out all those dates. So Stand and Deliver.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good, man. Good. Stand and Deliver.
Give us an on-site report.
Absolutely. On-site correspondent.
I'll try to. Because I know I'll be trying to make my way to WrestleMania then night one. I think it's not that far away.
Hell
so.
Yeah. No, for sure. Sure.
I want to talk about, I thought tonight the biggest thing that they was promoting was that women, Iron Women match. And I from how they was promoting it and everything else, and before tonight, I came in not knowing which match could be the main event, but how they promoted it, the women, I guess the women should go on last because they haven't really gave emphasis on any of the other matches, not even the men's title match. And then they had to take a few matches away because we were supposed to get the Creed brothers and stuff. And then they threw together a match. I guess that's why they called a wild card and had New Day come down there and get pretty deadly.
I'll take it.
So, just thinking about it, with that women's match and they only having one real baby face, just like in the men's match, they only have one real baby face. I want to see how it goes. I'm a fan of Zoe Stark's. I've been a fan of Zoe Stark's for a while, so I want to see like how they do this and who they go. I want to see, do we get the rise of Roxanne and hopefully the build to her winning the title at Stand and Deliver. What do you guys think about that? And just by they really having one babyface, I know y'all was talking about I forgot her name. My name's slipping, but you know, Dex and Dex and Loomis' ex-wife. But
Indy Hartwell.
I know y'all was talking Indy Hartwell. Yeah,
yeah.
I know y'all was talking about her and bringing her up. But what if this could start the rise of Roxanne Perez as it go? Because to be honest, I think she's the most interesting person.
Bruce, I'm going to let you take this one, and I'm probably going to just kind of, like, sit back for a bit because I listened to everything Jarrell said, and I don't remember a word he said. I'm really – like, it's so weird. And I don't know if this – you know, well, you guys are going through COVID or whatever, like – but, man, in the last, like, 3 hours, I went from feeling like there's, like, a mild cold to being, like, hit by a bus. Crazy.
So when it comes to the match, well, the match is, I guess, to Darrell's point, the women's, regardless of the matches that are booked on Saturday, two Iron Survival Challenge matches have definitely received the most amount of hype and focus. So it's plausible to think that one of them would main event. The only issue is NXT is hard pressed to not have one of their top titles in the main event if it's on the card. So, you know, the only time the NXT Men's or Women's Championship doesn't tend to main event is if they're involved in the main event, like Adam Cole being a part of War Games or something like that. So I think that Breaker and Cruz have the heat behind it to be a main event. Further, if it came on after one of the two Iron Survival Challenge matches, the crowd is going to be dead for the main event. I just don't see how coming off that type of a match, there's going to be anything but intensity and emotion, especially towards the last few minutes that I was talking about earlier, and then have the crowd be up and ready again for the main event title match. Especially one that, while they have played these vignettes over this last several weeks, I think it's actually been hindered from the fact that they haven't been in front of the audience. We don't have a gauge of how the audience feels toward this match, because I think the last 3 weeks, all we've seen have been vignettes for these two. With these two, between these two, for these two, but not actually in the ring together. And so if you're going to have to go with that might be the buffer match, the headlining match before the main event, you might need to go with I say the Women's Iron Survival Challenge match, as Darrell was saying, probably has the most heat behind it of any match on the card. So that makes the most sense as the main event. Now, the other thing is, Nate said earlier he believed that Indy Hartwell is going to be the victor, but I said I'm pretty strong in my belief that this is all set up for Roxanne Perez to come back and win the whole match and take it out from everyone else and lead to her to be the one to dethrone Mandy Rose. They seem to have been building towards Roxanne Perez when Perez first won the breakout tournament after all. So, but they made the right call in audibly from that and not having her really win it there, because we saw throughout the next couple months, she still has some growing pains to go through. And I think she's done well the past few months in terms of really finding her groove. She has issues with two women in the match, with Indy Hartwell, sort of that, I want to be your friend, but Indy's also trying to smarten you up to the game kind of thing. And then, of course, her issues with Cora Jade. I think that even though it's three heels, one kind of tweener, and then Perez, the tweener being Hartwell, I still think Perez is set up to win, just because I feel like everyone else Stark and Jade already had their title matches and they lost. I think Hartwell might have had a title match too and lost. James is nowhere near the level. So if I'm just looking at this, Perez is the only one left, and she's really the only one that I want to see win coming out of this match. Hartwell would be fine, but I think what they need to do is what I said last week. Book her confidently like they did tonight, especially in that backstage segment with Mandy Rose. Book her to have some really strong moments, those highlight reel moments during the match, but not be the winner. And that sets her up to continue her run moving forward. I think you need to have Perez be the one here to take the victory. And then I'm with Darrell. You got to start that rise. Now, again, we don't know when that match is going to happen. If the title match comes on TV, if it's going to come at Stand and Deliver in 3 months or so. But whatever it is, I think this is the time where it's like when Rhea Ripley pinned Shayna Baszler in War Games. Like, you knew that was the moment that she was going to be, that eventually she'd be the one to pin Shayna Baszler and win the NXT Women's Championship. I think Saturday is going to be that moment for Roxanne Perez, and it's going to be the eventual countdown to Mandy Rose's end of her NXT Women's Championship run. So I hope I answered all your questions, Darrell.
Yes, you did. You answered my question. Yes, you did. I like what you
anything
said.
Else
like
for a second?
Yes. Looking at the atmosphere of NXT right now, And I want to ask you guys this, and I want to throw it to you and see what you guys think. I think NXT could be loading up and be looking for a reset, because you can see how they prolonging some of the matches. We're not getting the Creed versus In the Shield match right now. Not getting a women's title match at this time, at this pay-per-view. You're not getting the North American Championship match. What do you guys think if NXT do like a reset, like a soft, in the comics it would be called a soft reboot, where they're not saying they reset and they're not putting it out there like they did when Vince them took over and said the 2.0 thing and stuff like that. And I know they just went back to just NXT, but doing a reset where you reset how you do a match, how you put people out there, how you putting things together. Because before, I know you guys used to talk about and saying how when Triple H was running NXT and Vince was over the main roster, that handshake of guys agreement on how you get guys ready, because how NXT looked so different than the main roster. And now with it being in Triple H's hand and you got it now in Sun's hand, that it seems similar because the main roster seems so different than what this NXT is. It looked like how the old NXT used to be. What do you guys say if they did like a soft reboot or a soft reset? Not letting us know, but we could tell by how they start with the matches and how they build people. What do you guys think about that?
I think NXT is constantly just evolving. Wrestling in general is just kind of set up to always have natural resets. So are you talking a reset in terms of like presentation or?
Roster, I think, is more what he's trying to say.
Roster.
Is that what you meant?
Like roster presentation, like how you perceiving people, because just looking at this card that we getting on Saturday, it's the women's match is kind of strong, but the matches overall don't seem as strong, even though, like, you're putting a New Day on there or something like that in an Eye of Fire match that you just started this rivalry on, on the card. You feel me?
We have to remember one thing, Darrell, and this is something that Nate and I discussed last week when we brought the Legends Roundtable, and Sean Waltman was talking about he's surprised Triple H hasn't called Shawn Michaels yet about Zoe Stark. NXT is developmental. You're not coming here to see the best matches, right? You're not coming here to see, you know, a Ric Flair, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat Broadway or anything like that. And you're coming to see people on their journeys as they develop into eventually who they hope are going to be the ones that anchor Monday and Friday nights. So already with that, I think we need to make sure that we recalibrate and understand that the presentation of this show, as Nate is saying, is constantly evolving and the roster is constantly evolving because that's the churn of developmental. I guess you could say that if they want to do anything to make them stand out as developmental, they could go the Savannah Bananas route and have all those wacky things going on. But we had enough of that in 2.0. I think that what we're seeing with, you know, the New Day coming down, the thing with Solo Sikoa, earlier we had, you know, Dolph and Natalya. I think NXT is going to be a constant state of evolution for people. You've seen the wrestlers on their journeys. Like we said, Roxanne Perez definitely wasn't ready to be champion 6 months ago, but I think she's ready to get that spot now. And because of that journey she's gone on, both on the mic and in the ring, it's really been a state of improvement, right? So having the New Day come down, I think, is also representative of what NXT does represent. Pretty Deadly is in a position where there's really no one left for them to feud with, and they're at such a level, both in terms of their in-ring work and their act itself, that it's hard for them to be matched up with anybody. And for the other team, for you to think they really have a shot against them, except for like the Creeds or maybe Indus Share. having the New Day come down right now, I think works in two ways. One, it gives Pretty Deadly a legitimate foe to compete against on Saturday, as they had no one to fight, to wrestle. You know, Xavier Woods started in NXT and WWE, so it's kind of a homecoming for him. And two, the New Day has grown stale on SmackDown. They've lost a lot of their big matches lately. They still have that record-breaking title run in their back pocket for at least a little longer, depending on how long the Usos' reigns go. So I think it's a good way to get the New Day off of Raw and SmackDown, and those viewers, who many of whom don't watch NXT, give them a refresh in NXT, give them a title run. I'm with Cam. Cam tweeted today during that thing, give the New Day the NXT tag belts. I don't care. I'm in the same position. I think the New Day, even if it's just carrying the title for a brief feud with Pretty Deadly, just looking at what they did tonight, the promo battles, the matches in general, I think having New Day there adds a boost, an injection into the tag team division that really has just been Pretty Deadly, the Creed brothers, and then you have, unfortunately, a steep drop-off with the likes of, you know, Finn Blade and Briggs and Jensen and the Dyad. So I think this really helps the tag division. It makes NXT – it doesn't make NXT must-watch. But if you're watching on SmackDown, you hear that the New Day is going to be on NXT or that they're the NXT tag team champions or they're going to be on Deadline, that might entice you more to watch the show. And I think it was Joel Pearl who tweeted it today. You know, when you're trying to sell tickets for your first NXT PLE outside of the Performance Center or outside wherever they're at, the Capitol Wrestling Center, since the pandemic, it's probably good to have an act like the New Day on the card to sell that show. So this could mean that the New Day holds the titles all the way until Stand and Deliver to help sell that show at the PLE as the first one outside of the Capitol Wrestling Center. So I'm all for this. I think it's a better use of the New Day than just having them toiling on SmackDown, doing stupid skits, or winning random tag matches, or putting other tag teams over. I think this is a much better use of their time, their energy, their bumps, and their ability to give the rub to others. Because I think we know Pretty Deadly is going to be good, but imagine them coming into on SmackDown, and the first thing they can talk about is how they defeated the New Day and just set them up as, you know, a tag team of the future, basically. And again, the division on Raw and SmackDown has basically just been the Usos, the New Day, when RK-Bro is around them. Now you have Alpha Academy, but it's just a bunch of, you know, it's not the strongest tag team division. So this could be a great way to help on both sides of the card.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's like, you know, New Day they've been around for so long at this point, and they're missing, you know, obviously missing a big part of their act with Big E. And I definitely didn't mean that pun not intended, but I'll even take it. But they're, you know, they're missing a big part of their act with Big E, even their entrance. You know, it's like, I just hearing the New Day's music start and not hearing Big E go, oh, you know, to kick it off. It takes away from their presentation, and it sucks that, you know, he's in kind of the position that he's in. And, you know, I really, I hope we're able to see him, you know, either get back in the ring or get back on TV at some point in the near future. But I think, you know, because they have been getting stale, they've been stale for a little while. Yeah, I agree with Bruce. I think this is a great, great opportunity to bring them down here, have them give a rub to Pretty Deadly. I would love to see them get a run with the NXT titles, honestly, like kind of selfishly, just to see New Day in NXT, I think would be kind of fun. Yeah, definitely a fan of, you know, Xavier Woods, Kofi Kingston. So that'd be cool to see. But I definitely think this is a good place for them.
I think if they do win the NXT titles, I could be wrong, but I think it would just be them and the Revival that had won the Raw, SmackDown, and NXT Tag Team Championships.
I'd have to fact check that, but that sounds right.
Because the Usos weren't in NXT long enough for that to happen. RK-Bro never happened. Yeah. The New Day weren't there. I'm trying to think of tag team champions throughout the past couple of years.
Jason Jordan.
They
won it.
American Alpha, they didn't win. They didn't win the Raw SmackDown ones both. They and I don't think Jason Jordan ever tagged with Chad Gable on Raw SmackDown because he was in that whole Kurt Angle's my dad storyline. He never got there. I think it's just the Revival, and then if the New Day does win, the New Day. I'll have to check that for Saturday, but I think that's I think that's accurate.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be definitely cool. Anyway, Jarrell, anything else for us tonight, or shall we move on?
I just leave with a comment. Yeah, I get what y'all are saying. And I'm the type of person, I don't come to NXT to watch the souped up matches because I've been watching NXT back when it was on the Sunshine Network and before it was on Hulu all the way. And you had them Florida Championship Wrestling. I'm in it for the developmental and the story that you can tell with it and the transitional story that can be maybe ran over to the main roster. I think that's a problem that we had when it was Triple H led and it was Vince because Vince can tell stories. Greatest promoter of all time, but when you're talking about a booker, he probably one of the worst. Just when it comes to him doing his own ideas and not having people help guide him and he guide their ideas to something. But the stories that could just easily be transferred over, like without having to add a gimmick, like the people like the Big E's, the Seth Rollins, you can even go down with Bayley's and Becky's and all of that, like that can easily be transferred over that you don't have to look at the person and be like, if I put this person versus this person, do I need to change this person's gimmick just to even make it seem realistic? Like, I know y'all was talking about Axiom, and they said how he was a nerd. If you take Axiom, the character that you have right now, and try to build it up and put it in the match, and I know this crazy matchup, but put it in the match with Roman Reigns, the character that he displayed right now, the way that he talk on the mic, you put that up against Roman Reigns, soon you start letting Roman Reigns dig on him and get on him on the mic, it's going to destroy that character before you even can get to the in-ring work. And with how the main roster fans are, that would kill that character. A la how Vince, not knowing how to tell stories, ruined probably a super babyface run for Bayley when people, even who was with him, was saying, she could be the next John Cena if he would have told the story right. And when you can just tell the moment that he ruined her when he had her afraid to hit somebody with a kendo stick. I think it was Alexa Bliss.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the transition. And what I mean by reset, we resetting characters in ways. Like, I don't see scripts being able to come back to the main roster as scripts and be able to make it. I don't see someone like Grayson Waller
able to transition. I don't think some of these acts. I don't think some of these acts are meant to go to the main roster as they are. I don't think Axiom is going to be on Raw SmackDown as Axiom, for example. So, I think that what you're saying has merit, but I also don't think that each act is going to go up as is. I think they're going to be tweaked and completely.
But that's what I'm saying. If it's a tweak or a complete gimmick change, then you're doing developmental on the main roster itself because now you got to develop this character into being something and not like what we're starting to see now, how they're referring back to different things and trying to refer and lock different stuff up, which was if people know in the main roster, especially on the bench, some of the storylines that he would always forget about and would drive people away because they were like, why? What's this? Like, you just forgot about this. You forgot about that. And it wasn't always that way. You know, like, this person forget about this and stuff like that. It makes it seem hard because it's like you're overworking yourself by doing too much at one time. If you it's hard for me to try to put the thoughts together at a short period of time. But that's what my whole thing was when it came to it, like a reset. So it can be hand-in-hand as you start to see now with them trying to do stuff hand-in-hand with how they talking. Last night when they was on Raw, they was talking, they brought up stuff about people in NXT and how with Oscar in that triple threat match, they talk about how Oscar was feared in NXT, how she was one of the most feared champions of all times, stuff like that, that you can bring up little snippets and stuff. They have been sprinkling that in into all the shows and stuff like that, even from just between show to show. So that's what I was just trying to mean.
Sure, but I'll just counter and end it with this by saying we see repackagings happening all the time on the main roster. I mean, Nikki Cross just went through one, Alexa Bliss just went through one, Bray Wyatt just went through one. So I wouldn't be concerned about that if they're going to have a character completely changed going from NXT to Raw or SmackDown, because it happens all the time. So.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's true. But a lot of them repackages, we could call those refix and bad gimmicks that Vince came up. And you're trying to
And I think Axiom is one of those when Vince was still in charge.
Yeah. That's why I was saying by the soft reboot, because you got a lot of those still on there, and they still going with. That's why I was meaning that.
I have a sense that Triple H is just trying to make it work with what they have, because he realizes the shift at 2.0 was so drastic that maybe he's just trying to ride it out. And then, yeah, I just don't think that big of concern in NXT.
Cool.
All right.
Well, that's my time, you guys, and I'm glad I was able to speak to you guys, man. And when the money come together, man, and y'all do a post show for Stand and Deliver, I call you soon. I leave up out of the arena.
All right, man. Sounds like a plan. Sounds like a plan.
Thanks, Zero.
All right, man. We'll catch you later. Take care.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thanks as always, Drell. So let's talk about some of the other things we haven't talked about here tonight. So let's take a look. So we talked a little bit about our main event. We talked a bit about each one of the Iron Survivor Challenge triple threat matches. Let's talk about Brooks Jensen, Josh Briggs versus Idris Sanofe and Malik Blade. This was a pretty short match. Briggs and Jensen went over in about 4 minutes. This was also, there's a lot of interference here in the match. We had, have they actually named Kiana James' assistant yet?
She's called her Gigi in vignettes, but nothing beyond that.
That's what I thought. I thought it was something like that, but I couldn't remember. So we saw Gigi show up halfway through through the match to take an envelope and put it into Jensen's jacket. That caused a bit of a distraction there, but not enough for Idris Inofe and Malik Blade to get the win. Von Wagner then made his way to the ringside and attacked Odyssey Jones, who was ringside for Idris Inofe and Malik Blade, providing a bit of a distraction, allowing Jensen to pick up the win. This is a weird match because it started on a TikTok. I think it was Sol Ruka, and there was somebody else.
Stop doing this stuff. Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, this was terrible. I mean, A, it's TikTok. B, come on. Yeah, I understand starting things on social media, whatever, to try and get people, you know, to pay attention to social media, whatever. Like, I get it. Marketing. But, like, oh, my God. This whole angle is just really strange. So, like, they get into a – like, you see in the background of this TikTok video – Malik Blade, Odyssey Jones, and Idris Inofe kind of getting into a little bit of a verbal argument with Brooks Jensen and Josh Briggs, which led to a match here tonight. They had the match. They were fired up against one another. And then at the end of the match, they just shake each other's hand, and they're like, oh, yeah, good game, good sportsmanship, guys. And that was that. It was like, what the heck was the point of the entire angle? You know, like, it's not like – it doesn't seem like this is going to continue. It just seemed like it was something to talk about on TikTok for a little bit, have a match tonight, and then that's it. It really weird. I'm not sure what they're going for with this. As we know, my brain isn't completely working tonight, so it's possible I just missed something. Did I miss anything, or was this as weird as I think it is?
No, here's the thing. One, this is the second or third straight week where they've shown that an angle or feud or match has begun because something on TikTok. They really need to stop with this stuff.
Yeah, like,
it was bad enough. It's bad enough using Twitter just to try and be kayfabe and get things over. But if anything, it feels very WWE 2K22, my rise, my career mode. Like, just all this stuff. And then this is another one of those matches where the match didn't matter. It was just another angle to get to something. Too often in NXT, but in WWE in general, the match is secondary, and the match is what we go there to watch. Like, yes, the story and the journey is there. I saw someone compare it today to the match is the steak. The story are the spices and seasonings you add to make it better, right? So I would like to see more emphasis actually placed on the matches and wins and losses than on all these matches just being there for this purpose of being an angle or to further an angle. As you saw here, it's about furthering Von Wagner versus Odyssey Jones. It was about Kiana James still trying to egg on Fallon Henley by proxy through Brooks Jensen, who got a VIP invitation to Deadline. I'm just like, dog, you worked there. Aren't you already going to be there? Why do you freaking need an invitation? I said, oh, that's right. You're not worthy enough to have a spot on the card. That's why you need an invitation to be there. Gotcha. So this whole thing was just, and poor Inofe and Blade, like, they shouldn't be jobbing the Brooks Jensen and Josh Briggs. Like, they have more potential than Briggs and Jensen definitely do. Yeah, Briggs and Jensen have a title reign to their credit, which was the UK Championships, but they still have a title reign to their credit. And it's confusing because the match was there, but in totality, the match did not matter. And you can't have a wrestling show when your matches don't matter. And this goes beyond the whole not having clean finishes kind of thing. This is strictly about the match actually having a purpose, and that purpose being we want to watch the match. The purpose of these matches has been the actual match. And I think that is the most frustrating thing about NXT recently, is that so many of these are just a means to get to the next part of the angle and not the focus isn't on the actual match. And even a lot of the great matches will come down to some sort of random interference at the end or some random bit of mishap that makes no sense throughout the story of the match. And so, like if you're watching Raw last night, why the hell did Dolph Ziggler interfere in the Mustafa Ali Austin Theory match? There was no purpose for that to happen. It came out of nowhere, and it came out of nowhere in the worst possible way. So I really want that to change here with NXT, especially because we know that NXT is where WWE tries a lot of different things. And if they keep going with this stuff here, then we're going to see this translate even more to Raw and SmackDown, which just is going to lead to more frustration. This wasn't the only match tonight that was an angle or a match just to further an angle. And that was the Zion Quinn, Tony D'Angelo match. I forgot Zion Quinn had a match tonight because it was all about D'Angelo talking to Wesley afterwards. Right. So I need them to get away from this and go back to focusing on building angles, building stories through the actual matches. You know what I'm saying? Using the match to really emphasize the story. You have the stuff leading into the match and after the match to augment it, but the match should be the main focus of the stories and not the angles leading into it.
Amen. That's my two cents, because I can't disagree with the word that you said, really. I know there are people out there like Tom, for example. Like Tom goes for the story. He doesn't watch for wrestling. He watches for the stories. So there are definitely people out there that are like that. But I mean, as far as I'm concerned, like I agree with you. I think you should be, at least me, I'm going there to watch the wrestling. The stories are, they're secondary. They're still important, but like that's, I want to see the good action. I want to see the wrestling,
In their own ways. But the match should be the main focal
point,
because that is what this is about. If you want to equate it to other sports, because it happens so often, right? We go to watch the games, but we still are there for the stories that are built up through the media questions, through the interview questions, right? Through the interactions they have with each other on and off the court or off the field or the pitch, wherever it might be. So, and I think what WWE has done over the past two decades to their detriment is treat the fans as if they don't know how to follow a story in a match throughout the match. And your bread and butter basics in pro wrestling is you need to be able to tell a story through the match. And that could be that you're the babyface working from under through against a dominant heel. It could be the heel is working a body part against someone. How are they going to overcome that? It could be that they have tremendous respect for each other and they're trying to get over that hump. There are different stories you can tell within the ring through the ring work that I think WWE forgets about and spends too much time using the matches as solely the means of to further the feud rather than the match being the fulcrum of why that feud is actually going on.
All right, so let's take a look at Thea Hale versus Isla Dawn. This match is about 2 minutes and 50 seconds. It was Isla Dawn's, they called it her in-ring debut in NXT, but I feel like she's had a match at least once in NXT before. I'd have to fact check that, but I think I'm right. So like I said, it was about 2 minutes, 50 seconds. Thea Hale actually got a little bit more offense than I was expecting here. I was really just expecting Isla Dawn to wipe the floor with Thea Hale. But that didn't quite happen. I mean, it did, but like, I really just expected it to be like a minute long squash match. Was not expecting it to go almost 3 minutes. But Thea Hale, I've got to give her so much credit. Like the amount of energy that woman has is absolutely off the charts. The charisma and energy for days. I think, again, I've said this a thousand times. I think she's going to be a star in this business. You know, she's still got some time to work on her in-ring stuff. She's only 18 years old, 19 years old, whatever it is. But I really enjoy her. And Isla Dawn too. Like she, I haven't seen a whole heck of a lot of her work, but from, you know, what I've seen so far, what I saw tonight, you know, certainly interested. She pulled off basically pulled off the win here after, I called it a clothesline in the report, but it wasn't really a clothesline. It was almost like a sling blade type of a deal. I don't know what to actually call her finisher, but it was pretty cool. She pulled that off twice, picked up the win. This was really just kind of, again, a bit of an angle, as we were just talking about, to further the feud between Isla Dawn and Alba Fire. Alba Fire showed up after the match and attacked Isla Dawn. Alba Fire showed up and attacked Isla Dawn. And then a gaggle of referees, as I said in the report, tried to pull them apart until Isla Dawn went for the poison mist on Fire, and Fire ducked out of the way, hit one of the referees, allowing Dawn to escape. So any thoughts on either Thea Hale in Isla Dawn or on the Isla Dawn and Alba Fire rivalry?
I said Ivy Nile was right earlier. Duke Cutson was right earlier tonight, too, when he's like, I don't think you should take this match. As an educator, I understand Andres Chase's desire to have Thea Hale learn by experience, but I also think Duke Hudson was accurate to say, like, she's not ready for this level yet. And that's just based on the fact that, I mean, well, one, Isla Dawn's much more experienced than Thea Hale, but if you just look at how Isla Dawn has been presented, going back to what Darrell was saying earlier, since she's debuted in stateside, she's been put right up there with basically the number, you could argue the number one, probably the number two babyface behind Roxanne Perez in Alba Fire. That's a real big feud to start off with and to be thrust into. You made your debut, after all, in a women's championship match. So that already puts you at a spot on the card that is much higher than Thea Hale. So just as an objective observer, you wouldn't think she has much of a chance. Yeah, she got some offense in here, but it seemed more like Dawn was just toying with her as part of her character. We talked about last week how it's just too much spooky happening too quickly with too many different characters. This just being another one of them. But she... her facial reactions do border on overacting, but I think for Isla Dawn, it's better than not having that right now. We haven't really, aside from a vignette, I don't think we've actually heard her on the mic yet in stateside. So until that happens, she does need to use her body language, facial expressions to really get over her personality, her character. I think she's doing that pretty well here. This is, I think, going to be a sneaky match on Saturday in terms of the quality, especially for those who aren't as familiar with Isla Dawn because of her work in UK. I think they're going to be impressed with what she and Fire pull out. Of course, it doesn't hurt to have Alba Fire as your dance partner. But I do wonder then, looking at the opposite side of this match that happened, what this eventually means for Chase U, because last week Hudson said he couldn't stop his kick when he kicked Chase the week before because momentum, but then he stopped his kick last week from hitting Thea Hale and said that he could stop at any time, which made Chase really angry. They didn't really address any of that tonight, I guess beyond Chase being frustrated and angry with Hudson. So about questioning him regarding Thea Hale getting the match against Isla Dawn, it seemed like Hudson was being billed as the person who's sneakily trying to take Thea Hale away. Now I'm not really sure what's going on because it did seem like he really did have her best interest. There are decks to this Hudson Chase U thing that I think need more fleshing out, and hopefully we'll get that in the coming weeks. But yeah, I think that Thea Hale has potential. They've shown that they believe in her, and she gets better each and every week. I do think that it'll probably be maybe another year before we see a real solid push for her in terms of a singles run.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all. I think she's got a lot to learn, both on the mic as well as, you know, in the ring, before she's really ready for like a primetime push. But I think they're all the pieces are there. And I'm looking forward to it once it does happen. All right, we're probably going to kind of go over a few things or gloss over a few things tonight. But the last thing, at least, that I wanted to bring up, that I don't think we've at least touched on anyway, is Zion Quinn versus Tony D'Angelo. We saw Tony D'Angelo beat Zion Quinn in approximately a minute and 40 seconds. D'Angelo, this is his first match back after, I think it was a 10-week hiatus due to a knee injury. We saw D'Angelo pretty handily beat Zion Quinn. I believe it was a spinning powerbomb. I think it was a spinning powerbomb that he used for the win, which is weird because he always used this fisherman suplex before. So I'm kind of wondering if this is either a bit of a repackage or if he's going to start using like a bit of a different finisher. Before I go into a coughing fit, Bruce, take it away.
You said fisherman suplex. I could have swore it was like a fisherman's neck breaker or something. Whatever.
Yeah. You know what it was? It was a fisherman, like a fisherman buster. I did not a suplex.
Yeah. Okay. That rings more of a bell to me.
Yeah.
Maybe for him, this puts less torque on his knee from having to twist and turn on the fisherman's. So I don't know. Cool. Zion Quinn is in the spot we've been saying that is best for him. And that's kind of that mid card to put people over. I do like how D'Angelo said, I don't care about your issues with Dijak. I care about your issues with me. Like, what you have with Dijak doesn't matter at all to me because why would it, basically. So I do appreciate that. I think Wesley looked kind of foolish saying, you can wait for me until after I finish with Dijak. Like, even if it wasn't a heel, why would you just be like, okay, I'll wait, And then Dijak looking like Steven Seagal out there, better than T-Bar, for sure. Really, his NXT character before that didn't talk much outside of his feud with Keith Lee, so it's hard to really get a gauge. I think he's trying a bit too hard to be that kind of bodyguard and blade type of persona, but his matches are going to be fine. Wesley's got a bump like hell for him, and he's going to look like he's literally broken in half a couple times. And I do think that I think Dijak is better off going for the NXT title. I wouldn't be surprised if when he does wrestle Wesley, it's not for the title, because he's like, I don't want that title. That's not my goal. You're just in my way. And he uses Wesley as a literal stepping stone to then challenge for the NXT Men's Championship. I think for his character, that would work based off of the vignettes and the promos he's given with this repackage. I think winning the North American Championship for him, with everything he said the past few weeks, would be a bit of a step down, even though logically it makes sense to build him that way.
All right, guys, I think that's going to bring us to the end of our show here tonight.
There's one more thing, Nate. One more thing. We didn't talk about Braun Breaker and Apollo Crews on Saturday.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's kind of an important thing to talk about, isn't it? All right, so we saw Braun Breaker and Apollo Crews continuing their weird friendship outside of the CWC. They showed up at a fishing dock and went out and went fishing. They kind of, you know, back and forth, you know, with some like backhanded compliments and you know, here and there. And then all of a sudden, Apollo Crews ended up hooking a fish. And it almost seemed like they forgot all about their feud. They're celebrating about the fish. And then, of course, kind of start getting back into a little bit of their back and forth. Bruce, I'm going to let you take it away from there.
Yeah, so Crews actually showed up as Breaker was about to head out and was like, I'm here. And Breaker's like, you got to be kidding. Breaker was pretty upset that Crews caught a fish, even though Crews had never gone fishing, but Breaker himself didn't catch a fish. Well, of course that happens only on video when they're recording right then and there. They basically spent some time putting over each other's finishing moves and signature moves, and then basically, Apollo Crews told Braun Breaker that, he said, when Breaker asked him, what you expect me to tell you my game plan right here, and he goes, I'll show you mine if you show me yours. And so Breaker told him it's the same plan, be bigger, faster, and stronger than the other person. And Crews said, yeah, but that's not going to be against me. So on this Saturday, I'm going to win, take your title. Standard, pretty much standard stuff. Don't think Crews is going to be the winner here. I'd be shocked if Crews is the winner. It would be a good thing for his career, but I think if on Saturday the bell rings and Crews is announced as a new champion, there's going to be a sense of deflation within the crowd. So with that said, I think Breaker retains, and then I think I stand and deliver. He's going to lose it.
All right, so now I think that's going to bring us to the end of our show. Guys, if we did gloss over anything and you do want to talk about it, you can reach us at pwtorgnxt@gmail.com, or you can call in next week at 515-605-9345. Press 1, that'll flag you on the switchboard and let us know you want to talk. However, I am, for the night, I am Nate Lindberg. You can, actually, not just for the night, for probably the rest of my life, I'm Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT Hits and Misses, which Kelly's writing for me this week. I wrote the report for him tonight. He'll have my hits and misses up later on in the week. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. And we didn't go over emails because there are none. So if you want to send in an email, go ahead and we'll get to them next week or maybe on Saturday.
Kevin Catani, I'm looking right at you, buddy. Looking
TV,
right at you.
Flacking.
I know, man. Hey, he's your tag team partner. Remember? The Doctor's
Idiots?
Yeah,
but we're heels, so, you know.
Oh, all right. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. All right, guys. Well, with all of that, we'll see you next week. Take care.